The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Hot Stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I promised at the very end of our Sunday night show we would be back if things develop, and I had a weird feeling this morning that something could develop or some momentum would pick up on something. And sure enough, the Red Sox have signed Aroldis Chapman to a one-year deal worth $10.5 million. So we're going to spend a little while getting into that. We'll touch on some Soto nuggets in the final part of the show. With me tonight, I am Terry Cushman, by the way. I have a habit of not saying who I am if it's your first time listening. Joined tonight by Charlie Smith and Nick Diamond. How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing well.
Doing well.
Same. Doing well. Just kind of shocked with the news today.
Yeah. We were talking a lot about relievers in the last episode, and don't think any of us had our eggs in this basket. And so let's just go ahead and get right into it. Were you surprised at the development, Nick?
Yes, I never really considered this an option. They signed Justin Wilson, 2 weeks ago now, and I thought maybe he would go get a elite lefty reliever or maybe sign another guy like Justin Wilson. Aroldis Chapman is a really big surprise, and I mean, it kind of fits what they needed, the hard-throwing left-handed reliever that strikes out a lot of guys, but he also walks a ton of guys, and he's got a lot of other off-field issues that we'll probably talk about, so... I am surprised about it. It kind of came out of nowhere, and he also has a lot of past history in Fenway Park. You know, he's a Yankees pitcher. He's also won a World Series, so he knows how to win, but he also knows how to lose, so I don't know how he's going to do in Fenway Park.
Two, actually. When he gets traded, he wins a World Series. That's the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Charlie, how surprised were you?
Surprised and also just kind of head scratching moment, because if we're signing players with this guy's background, I'm kind of curious. Like we're clearly not caring about the off the field stuff. Like we're literally going to forget all the creepy and weird things he's done. I remember a couple years, I don't remember if it was the COVID year, but he was he had bulked up and was sparring in front of his house, like in front of his cars. And the guy is just gargantuan. He's just a monster. That's the last person in Boston that I'd want to upset. But now it's got weird energy written all over it. And I'm really curious to see how the rest of the clubhouse responds to him being there. I'm sure they're going to, you know, welcome him with open arms, because God forbid you don't, but it's just a weird signing. Very, very bizarre.
Not one I expected either. The guy has a lot of baggage, and I don't know. There's no shortage of options out there for guys to pick up. And I just didn't think we were going to go this route. So Nick, just what are your thoughts? Good signing, bad signing? I mean, we just gave our opening take and, you know, we were all surprised to varying degrees.
I would say overall it's a bad signing, just with the overall, you know, off-field issues, what could happen, how he's going to look coming in from a former Yankee coming into Red Sox clubhouse. But if you look at it the other way, just on paper, he makes the team better. Like, they didn't have a left-handed reliever that threw 100 miles per hour in their bullpen. They haven't since, like, Andrew Miller. So it's going to be nice to see a guy come in here and throw 101 and dominate lefties when he throws strikes, but that doesn't always happen. So we'll see. I think he makes the team better, but I just don't think he was worth it at this point. You know, he was $10.75 million. I think you could have got another lefty reliever out there for that amount of money. Or if you spend $3 or $4 or $5 million more a year, you can get Tanner Scott or someone elite. So it's a weird move, but it probably works for the season if clubhouse works with him and it opens him with open or welcomes him with open arms. So he makes the team better a little bit, but I just don't think it was worth it.
Charlie.
Yeah, this was a head-scratching one for me. I think this was we're going to pretend like you have no emotional baggage, and we're just going to, you know, really harp on the fact that you can throw 105-mile-an-hour fastball. This was one of his better years in baseball, and first in a while. He almost had 100 strikeouts. I wasn't sure if he actually got to it. He ended up having 98 punchouts in 61 and two-thirds innings. So the last time that he was close to 100 was back in 2015. The last time he did it, he was a Cincinnati Red. He had not had that 100 number since then. So I stand corrected. 2023, he actually had 103. I apologize. I'm curious to see how it works out. Nick touched up on something already. Tanner Scott, what was he expected to get again? How many more million a year over how many extra years? Probably 5-year deal.
So I just looked up the trade rumors one. We haven't gotten to him yet, so I guess this will kind of be a spoiler in a way. But they have him projected to get a 4-year, $56 million deal. So that's...
I thought it was going to be 5 for $80.
That's 14 per. And you'd have right. him for 3 years beyond this. That sounds way better to me. But...
I mean... this made a lot more sense to me, I think, long-term than getting Aroldis Chapman. Tanner Scott's also a lefty, so it addresses, right? Isn't Tanner Scott a lefty?
They're both
lefties.
That's correct.
So you would have already addressed that situation. That's one. Two, Tanner Scott has no baggage at all whatsoever. I'm curious to see who's really, really close with Chapman, if he's going to also try to be like a recruiting person to bring people to Boston, because I'm kind of curious, like, are the Red Sox going to try and also get Tanner Scott, or is Tanner Scott going to be a potential fallback option if we don't get Juan Soto? I which is weird because one's an elite level hitter, top five in the game. And then the other is one of the better closers on the market, or period, however you want to look at it. So I don't think we're going to get both of them. I think that would be insane. It'd be like the Boston Red Sox all of a sudden turning into the 2009 New York Yankees. Like, you want that starter? We'll get him too. You like AJ Burnett? We'll bring him on. CeCe Sabathia? Perfect. Mark Teixeira? Sure. They're just going to get all of the top tier free agents and start building a juggernaut. I don't see the Boston Red Sox doing it. This was like a quiet, for the lack of a better term, unsneaky signing. Like, $10.75 million, I don't know, head scratching. It's just head scratching.
So I can't shred the move as a bad move from a performance standpoint. He still pitches at a relatively high level. Last year, 3.79 earned run average. That was up from 3.09 the season before, which was split between the Royals and the Rangers. 2022 wasn't a particularly good year for him, but since then he's pitching fine. 5 home runs were given up last year, just 4 the year before. So he's keeping it in the park relatively. Still does get hit hard at times, you know, if he's hanging a slider, but strikeout per nines, that's my favorite stat, in pitching, 14.3 off the charts. I mean, if you're in double digit territory, you're punching out guys. And then the higher you go, the more insane you are. Charlie, you mentioned what, 98 strikeouts and six, you know, 61 and two thirds innings.
61 innings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting it done there. I'm not sure what his role will be. I mean, obviously there must have been some talk between the Red Sox front office and his agent. $10.5 million. He's not coming in just to face lefties. He is going to be pitching in high leverage, whether that's the eighth inning or the ninth inning remains to be seen. Cora might use him, you know, I mean, if lefties are coming up in the eighth, then, you know, he might pitch that inning, but you slot in pretty well. I mean, you've got Liam Hendricks, who I'm assuming will probably pitch a lot of late innings. Garrett Whitlock has done it before. He's an option. A lot of people, as the hot stove season got started, liked Justin Slayton in that role. I'm a little bit skeptical, but I respect it. He could be a future closer. So that's in terms of the, you know, how he fits from a performance standpoint, but I've got a lot of problems with who he is as a person. And if I'm coming at you guys with this take, then I got to be pretty concerned. And he's going to be 37 years old right before the season starts. So next year is his age 37 season. He's still throwing hissy fits. He got ejected last year on the mound with the Pirates for arguing balls and strikes. 36 years old, can't stay composed. 2022, that's fairly recently. That was his age 34 season. He wasn't pitching well. Yankees made the playoffs, and he bailed during the playoffs. They wouldn't assure him a roster spot, so he said, I'm going home. And he literally went home, bailed on his team. Most infamously, he had a 30-game suspension for an alleged domestic violence incident. I'm calling it alleged because he was never charged. Per reports, this is what he was accused of. He was accused of pushing his girlfriend, putting his hands around her neck, choking her, subsequently firing 8 gunshots. Supposedly, that was into the foundation of his garage. So he wasn't shooting at anybody, but he was firing off a gun while in a fit of rage. No charges were filed by the police due to inconsistency of the reports and insufficient evidence. His attorney denied all allegations. He was still suspended, and the reasoning for that was use of a firearm and the impact of that behavior on his partner. So while I'm saying alleged, I'm assuming he did confess to using a firearm at some point during that incident, because that's what he was suspended for. So this is a guy who's just, he's not a good guy. And I think it was it this previous spring training? All we heard for like the first week was how great of a guy Liam Hendricks is and how all of his teammates love him and how positively he influences all of his teammates. How many of Aroldis Chapman's teammates say that about him? Probably none. How many Red Sox fans placed an order today for an Aroldis Chapman jersey? Very few.
All two of them are very excited.
Well, his family probably did order some, so that's where the two probably comes from. But it's not a good signing. And here's the last thing I hate about it before I kick it back to you guys. Things need to sail extremely smoothly for this to work out. And there's a chance it could. I don't think it's a great chance, but if May comes around and he's getting lit up for half the month, it's going to be a circus. he could get demoted from whatever role he's in. And it's, we're all going to torch the signing. And by we, I mean the fan base in general is going to torch this signing and say, why did you do that? Why would you self-inflict yourself with all this drama? And it's going to go sideways. And it's just, it fits a pattern of either bad signings or weird signings. We've yet to have a signing in the Bloom or Breslow era that we truly feel good about. And we're all waiting for the Soto verdict to come. And we're probably at least a week from that. Still a couple of aces out there. But this, it's just a continuation of stuff that just doesn't fit well, doesn't sit well with the fan base. All across social media today, there's not a lot of enthusiasm behind it. I don't love it. I don't love it.
I don't think I saw a single person today be like, yeah, this is a great signing. If you took away his baggage and everything else, I think you would see a lot of that. But it's not early Yankees, Cubs, Aroldis Chapman anymore. This is just a washed-up 37-year-old that can strike out guys but occasionally walks people and gives up a couple bombs. Like, he's probably really good against lefties if he keeps it in the zone, but he's not a great pitcher anymore, and it was not worth it. It was just not worth the baggage. I think you could have signed AJ Minter, who's probably better at this point, if you wanted to go a little bit cheaper than Tanner Scott. If you, I think you'd have to give Minter 2 to 3 years, but you don't have to deal with Chapman's baggage.
Yeah, real quick on Minter. I don't remember how we ended on that. I think both, if I'm not mistaken, the three of us were together when we talked about Minter. I think all three of us passed on Minter, right? We all said it wasn't worth the contract, right?
I don't know. I'd give him a 3-year deal.
I'd rather have Minter over Chapman, just optically. I think one passes the eye test and like moral test. The other one is just beer goggles and fights on. I don't know. Like, we should be happy that we got a signing, but I'm not happy. You know? Like, I think there's a majority of folks out there that are sitting there going, really? Red Sox front office, this is what we got? Or is it, this is all that we're going to be able to get?
Do you think we get another bullpen piece? I don't think we get there's no way we get another lefty, but do you think they go sign another righty? Are they done?
Do you think the bullpen? Do you think that if we don't get Soto, for example, do you think that they would be out on Tanner Scott as a potential closer?
I think they already are out. I don't think they get three lefties in one offseason.
Yeah, where the Chapman move puts us out on Scott, for sure.
I think it would be more Clay Holmes, Hoffman type of range they would be going after.
Hoffman's in Philly, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's good too. Clay Holmes would be an interesting one. I do remember, I think you actually, Nick, coincidentally, I think you were the one who talked about Clay Holmes too. He was the closer in New York and then got overtaken by, oh my God, what is his name? Skinny guy, Luke Weaver. Mm-hmm. And Weaver basically ended up striking out, 67% of the people he was facing. It was like an ungodly number, but just doing his thing. So I don't know. I'm still hopeful. I know that, too many lefties in the bullpen might not be a good thing. This can't be the only pitching arm that we sign.
They need another upgrade in the bullpen. They need another upgrade. There's too many question marks. Like, Chapman could blow up. Hendricks could blow up. Whitlock could blow up. There's so many guys out there that could just completely, they could tear off or their arm could fall off and they'll never pitch again this season. You got a lot of young guys like Luis Guerrero, who you can't really count on yet. Slayton, you don't know if he's going to be as good as he was last year. I think you need another bullpen arm. I can't just be Aroldis Chapman and Justin Wilson. I think you got to get a righty too.
I think they'll sign another pitcher to a 1-year deal. But another thing that has me curious here is Andrew Bailey's coming off of a bad year. I'm going to say that was a bad year.
Started off great though. It started off like gangbusters.
With Haukan and Crawford for sure, but
right.
But how are they going to work together? I don't think Chapman's the type of guy you can radically change. You need him to be the pitcher that he's been. You might be able to tweak something here and there. You might be able to improve his slider, but if Chapman's throwing it 15% of the time, we're not going to turn that into 35% of the time, for instance. So I'm curious about that. I don't know how that fit or that relationship is going to work. And then the other thing I forgot to mention a minute ago is you got a lot of kids in that clubhouse. Rafaela, you know, Duran is still young. I wouldn't call him a veteran just yet. I mean, he's getting close, but he's still a young guy who's influenced by his teammates. You're going to have Christian Campbell come up. You're going to have Roman Anthony come up. Willie Abreu is still a young player. Justin Slayton in the bullpen with Aroldis, you know, is a young player. And so is Whitlock. There's just a lot of youth around Aroldis Chapman right now. And if things do go sideways, how is that going to impact them? Like, why would you bring him into that environment? You know, it's just, especially we have the resources this year to not do that. And, you know, me more than anyone on this podcast, I've been a Bauer guy. I'm not screaming it from the mountaintops this winter because we've got the resources to sign some big arms, Max Fried, Corbin Burnes. You know, last year you desperately needed a Bauer type guy because he was cheap. And he instantly would have been one of your top of the rotation guys. So it made sense, you know. So I relentlessly called for, you know, the Red Sox to go get Bauer. I'm not doing that this year. And I wouldn't have wanted Chapman. Tanner Scott, the more I think about it, that's a slam dunk move. You know, it's almost like getting Kimbrel coming into 2016. You had him for 4 years. $14 million a year isn't massive money. You were giving Kenley $16 a year. Kenley's a Hall of Famer, going to be number 4 or 5 on the all-time list. So I think a younger Tanner Scott still comes in under Kenley money. And I would have just done it. And that's a spot in the late innings that you don't have to worry about for the next 4 years. And I would have done it. So
Didn't Hader get over $100 million?
He did.
So I would 100% of going up to like $75 million for Tanner Scott. I don't care if it was $80 million, like he said, 5 years, 80, I would have done it. He's worth it at that point.
Hader got just a shade under 100 million. That was like the big deal when Houston signed him. It was 595.
It was
a 19 mil average. It was wild money.
Edwin Diaz got more.
Edwin Diaz also at the time though, I think he had 57 saves or 58 saves in his last season in Seattle before he went to New York.
A comp could be Andrew Miller, who got 4 year 36. And if you want to just make that a little bit more for
it's a little bit, that's about 10 years ago though.
Yeah, so I would say that 50, what was it, 55 mil, 60, I think that's a good number for 4 years.
Yeah, and if you add the fifth year, that pushes it up to about 70-75. But with Edwin Diaz, I would have done that deal. I would have backed up the Brinks truck for him. With Hader, I probably would have stayed off of him because there's just a lot of miles on his arm at this point. And
I mean, I picked Hader because they're both lefties, so okay, I can compare them that way. But
Hader's a little choky for me too in the postseason, so that's just another thing that would it be Kimbrel 2.0 essentially, is what I was wondering. But I, you know, having said all of that, I'm not as worried about the bullpen as I am the rotation at the moment. And here's another thing. Like, if we don't get Soto, and I'd still say less than a 50% chance, there's still a lot of optimism out there amongst certain writers, especially in the New York market. They're extremely fearful that the Red Sox are going to get him. But if we don't, and I still think it's going to be the Mets, and we don't end up with one of Burns or Fried, it's going to be an underwhelming winter again. And this Chapman deal is going to look worse, I think, that was what we came away with. And part of the consequence of signing Chapman was the fact that we just didn't develop guys in the bloom years. Like, this is a penalty for just not having those homegrown guys at least drafted and mostly developed by now. So we need some W's here in terms of moves. Like, we need moves we feel good about. And that's not one that any of us feel great about.
If we land Soto, everything changes. I really think so. But I don't think they're going to land Soto. I think they'll come up short, and I think the Mets will go crazy for him. So, do you think Chapman gets the first chance to close games, though? Or do they give it to Liam Hendricks, or do they go back to Whitlock? I don't know. I really have zero
I think it's going to go to Hendricks first. I think it's going to be Hendricks to lose. They're going to have to try to sell it as loyalty over something else. And, you know, the first or second blip, if Hendricks has back-to-back blips, I think you'll see Chapman in there. You already have another closer, you know? You have two, for the lack of a better term, two former closers / closers there. So, yeah.
I don't think Cora wants to mix and match him in the ninth inning.
I don't think he'd rather
have a guy that he could just stick in there and he gets the ninth. Especially when you have two big egos, probably. And guys who probably – I don't know how many saves Liam Hendricks has, but I want to say probably close to 200 in his career. And Chapman has 335, I think I remember.
He's over 300, yeah.
Yep. So these are two big-name closers. And, like, there's not many closers that have 200 saves. I don't know if Liam Hendricks has that much, but he's got to be close. So these are two established closers.
116.
Veteran closers that are going after a job in spring training. I don't think you see that very often.
Yeah, it's a unique situation for sure. Liam Hendricks is at 116 because for the better part of his career, he was not a closer. At one point, he was a starter, and it just completely did not work out. So he's had that disadvantage in, you know, kind of going against him. And then when he went to Oakland, he really found himself, you know, towards the later part of his career as an elite closer. Again, just looking at his numbers right now, and then when he was in Chicago, same thing, was closer, closer, closer. And then, of course, we knew about his medical situation.
I think the best strategy here is to not give it to Chapman no matter what. Have Cora have that conversation with him. That way, there's not going to be a demotion to cause drama. You know, give it to either Hendricks or Whitlock. I think either of them are fine. And then just don't promise it to Chapman, and then just have a heart to heart with Chapman. Say, listen, you're 37. We're trying to get back into the playoffs here. We just need you to be solid and just try to influence these guys as positively as possible. That's the best path forward here. If you go in and you say, Chapman, you got the ninth because you're the Hall of Fame guy, essentially. And then he spends, like I said, 2 weeks in May where his command sucks. He's not finding the strike zone, or the balls are going over the fence. What are his numbers at Fenway, by the way? I can get those here.
Let me check right now.
I'll try to look too.
But so I just think you're setting yourself up for a much bigger circus if you do give it to Chapman. So
I absolutely agree. You know, so if we're looking at Chapman's career at Fenway Park, let's see here. All right, so at Fenway Park, he's He's 1-2 with a 5.71 ERA.
Wow.
27 strikeouts and 17 and a third, 17 walks, and he's given up 11. He's had 11 earned runs.
How many appearances? Probably around 17.
That's 18 appearances total. Yeah, 18 appearances. Yeah. And as a member of the Yankees, it makes sense that he faced Boston a lot, but I don't remember. I think, Terry, I think it was you that mentioned it. He's not done well against the Red Sox in his past. And, you know, if you look at it, it was a different stage of his career, because if you look at it in relation to his earlier years when he was in Cincinnati, he was just absolutely lights out. I mean, against certain teams, he still has a zero ERA, which is absolutely insane. So Detroit career, 11 games, 0.96. Marlins, 10 games, zero ERA. Oakland, zero ERA. So there are a couple of zeros out there. It's not like he's, you know, gotten completely blown up only against the Red Sox. It might have just been because I'm not looking at his game-by-game log. He's also gotten, you know, some bad numbers against Philly too, but Philly's also had a juggernaut of a squad. So I'd be curious if we've looked at each game-by-game log, because it might just be one or two bad appearances in those 18 if we were to go game-by-game.
It's not. Just from watching, I can definitely tell he's had a lot of blow-ups. And to me, it's been walks for him against the Red Sox and then the occasional bomb.
Right.
All right, let's just pivot real quick over to Soto. So, news out today, it doesn't look like anything is imminent, but teams are being eliminated from the pool now. And he does have multiple $600 million offers in hand. Most of them are going to be at least 12 years, but Heyman came out with a report that he's seeking a 15-year contract. I've been kind of in the mindset that he's going to get 14 because that takes him to age 40. So I just feel like that's the number to me. And interestingly, the Dodgers have not been ruled out here as far as we know. So I don't know how insane things are going to get, but you'd have to think from a marketing standpoint, he wouldn't want to be on the same team as Shohei. Like he probably wants a team that's going to be his. And
yeah, actually, so Terry, I didn't want to interrupt you, but just to save you from going down that road, Shohei Ohtani was the one player that Juan Soto stated was the player he would love to play alongside, which would be insane, because how much money are the Dodgers going to have to defer for this contract too? I don't know how much they deferred from Blake Snell. I think they said $52 million was a signing bonus, and they've deferred a boatload of other money.
$64 million got deferred.
That's yeah. Insane. So you got $680 million, if I'm not mistaken, was the number for Shohei Ohtani. $60 million for Blake Snell. Teoscar Hernandez, how much was deferred from his contract? Is it 1 year, $3.5 million deal?
Yeah.
It was like 14. There's no, so, wasn't that much.
I think it was about eight, actually. $8 million from
that deal. That's insane. Juan Soto, like, they're not going to be able to defer. I'm shocked that they haven't already said, like, no, you guys can't do this. Because if the Dodgers end up getting Juan Soto, you have Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith,
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts, that guy.
Who finally Tommy showed Edmonds. Up in the postseason.
Did he ever? Tommy Edman, who signed a 5-year, $75 million deal, I think, or something like that.
That was deferred too, wasn't it?
I think a little bit. I don't know how much of it, but they're deferring all of it. It's like they're going all in right now to like suck in like 10 years or 20 years, whatever it is, because they're going to have so much money on the books. Shohei Ohtani could have signed a 20-year, $30 million deal, whatever it was. It wouldn't have even mattered. He makes over $55, $60 million in endorsements alone. It's insane.
I'm telling you, the Dodgers executives are like the characters from The Wolves of Wall Street. You know, they had this nice scheme. Brilliant. It was going well. Then they all started doing drugs and the whole thing came crashing down.
And it will come crashing down. $680 million, literally, what is that on paper? He's supposed to get $70 million a year, and he's being paid 20 over the first 10. So you look at it, 97% of that contract is being deferred. That's an ungodly amount of money. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if the Dodgers are rumored to be in on him. I don't think he'll end up in LA, to be completely honest. I don't think Major League Baseball would survive. I think it would be an unfair product at that point, because then you have the juggernaut versus other teams.
Even without signing him, it's they're the new Yankees. They're the 90s Yankees now in terms of hate and trying to buy championships and all that. Here's the crazy thing to me. You know what? You don't even need to use Soto. The cost of a stadium right now is between $1 and $1.5 billion. And the Dodgers got there with Shohei Ohtani and Yamamoto. And the newest baseball stadium is Globe Life. Is it Globe Life Park? Globe Life Field, where the Rangers play. And that costs $1.1 billion. So two players cost as much as a stadium. And here's the other crazy thing. All team owners want public funding for these stadiums. But so they're not willing to pay for the stadium, but the Dodgers here are willing to, you know, pay for it in terms of their roster. So that's the crazy thing to me. But so some teams are about to be ruled out. Hopefully the Dodgers will be one of them. I'm hoping they were probably trying to do a very unconventional short-term deal at big money, maybe. Because one of the things I'm thinking of, are they deferring all this money in mind to pay Soto now? Is that the plan?
Could be.
I don't know.
Well, didn't they confirm it was over $600 million? So it's not a short-term deal. Unless they're paying him for 4 years, $600 million.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. So, if the Dodgers were only if they were trying to do a weird short term deal like they did with Bryce Harper, for instance, this would rule them out. So, I'm wondering if they're going to be one of the early cuts here. Nick and I were talking before we came on. Toronto probably will be one of the teams that gets cut. So, I can't imagine anyone else in it besides the Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Red Sox. So,
I mean, if the Phillies get into it late, I don't think you can really offer a guy $600 million without meeting with him first. I don't think the Phillies ever confirmed met with him, but if a team was going to do it, it would be them.
Yeah. Another team, if there's a dark horse team, I think it'd be an extreme long shot. And they would have to come in with the highest bid. But who's to say maybe the Nationals don't want a reunion? Their owner is the second richest in Major League Baseball. He was the first until Cohen came along. So, but you look at where they're at, they're not much further behind the Red Sox, really. Maybe 1 or 2 years tops. And they've got a top 3 or 4 farm. So, I mean, it will be desirable to free agents, at least in terms of winning. I don't know who wants to really live in the DC area as far as that goes, but still, so that's a dark horse team. The Tigers, I think, could come out of nowhere. You know, they were a juggernaut a decade ago. So eventually their owner did pass away and the kids have it. So I don't know what their mindset is, but still, I don't know, but I hope the Red Sox do get him. Like, the longer this goes on, the more I want him, and I'm just hoping he opts out. That's what I've maintained all along. If the Red Sox are willing to front load more of the money, more than any other team, I think that could sway him a little bit, knowing that he's probably going to opt out and want to hit the market again. So, but I don't know. The New York writers are scared to death that Boston's going to get this done.
I want them so badly. the more this plays out, the more upset I'm going to be when we don't get him. But if we get him, I'll be very happy. If we don't, I'll be pretty pissed. But especially with all the teasing going on Twitter and all these people falling for dumb things, it's just, I can't wait till it's over, and I hope he ends up here. But
I can't wait for it to be over either. I don't know how I feel about wanting him one way or the other, though. I never liked his Soto shuffle. I thought that it really upset me. It was so frustrating. But, you know, a lot of people, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. If you have him on your team's exponentially better.
I want to take Juan Soto from the Yankees. It's like, I want to be able to say we took Juan Soto from the Yankees.
But not Chapman.
We took Chapman from the Yankees, too. If that has to come with it, I don't care. If we get Juan Soto, I'll take Chapman too.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I think we're going to find out in the next probably 24 to 72 hours what it's really coming down to. I think Boris probably does want this over more sooner than later. He's got Pete Alonso that he needs to get signed to a team. I think he's got one other big bat as well.
He's got Adamas.
Willie Adamas. Okay. Yeah. That's another one. Corbin Burns is a Scott Boris client. So he's got a busy winter ahead of him. So I'm thinking he's probably going to want that deal done at the front of spring training versus the back end of it so that he can facilitate some of those other deals. But he's already redeemed himself from last winter. I mean, so many players fired him. Jordan Montgomery was one. There was one or two other players as well, notable players that fired Scott Boris. So perhaps...
Was Bellinger one of them?
He might have been. Yeah, that sounds right. I want to say a young prospect did as well. So... We'll see. Kyle Teal is a Scott Boris client, so that's one guy we have. I don't think anyone notable beyond him that we have is. They could always hire him. You know, a player. I was paranoid Devers would do that going into that winter. Like, oh my goodness, if you know why wouldn't he at this point? But luckily, it didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So we'll wrap on that. But again, we'll be back as things develop. I'd be surprised if we didn't come back in the next 48 hours, but we'll just kind of ride it out. We do have two more installments of the MLB Trade Rumors episodes to do. You can hear stuff from the first three, actually. And I guess before we wrap, Frankie Montas went to the Mets on what, a 2 or 3 year deal. Relatively big money. None of us were high on him. I think I was a little bit, I spoke more positively about him, not really wanting him though. But he did kind of close the year pretty well. And if you look, the Mets are a great fit for him because look what they did with Severino and Sean Manaea. So I think he's going to the right team.
One thing about Frankie Montas that I didn't realize when you brought up his good second half was he got traded to the Brewers, who are known for kind of fixing pitchers. So maybe they did fix him. It is a good signing for the Mets. I didn't realize it at the time and I kind of forgot about it, but now that I look at it, I kind of would have been more high on him now, but yeah, I still don't think I would have given him that much money, but
I still wouldn't hate it now. I wouldn't have wanted him, but I've pointed out the last couple of winters that we dismiss these guys and we're not interested. But then when January comes around, late January, and you see the guys you did get, you start to have remorse. Like, why didn't we go get Montas at this point? You know, it's just is what it is. The last meaningful starting pitcher we signed was Nathan Eovaldi 6 years ago. That was the last meaningful deal. And I didn't even love that one at the time.
And that was re-signing him.
Basically, yeah, we traded for him as a rental, and then we re-signed him, yeah. And, I mean, the Giolito signing seemed significant at the time, but obviously it played out the way that it did. So, all right, and then the other one, Matthew Boyd went to the Cubs. Not a bad signing for them, though, because they do have guys in front of them, Imanaga, Justin Steele. There's at least one more in there that I'm forgetting, but
well, the Cubs are also in talks with possibly getting Kenley. I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but at least it's been discussed.
That's a quiet name. Yeah. Haven't really heard much because, there.
Well, I mean, Kenley left Boston, not as ugly as the way that Aroldis left New York, but it would be interesting to see him, you know, continue pitching back in the National League. And the Cubs last year, I know I was wrong on this one, but I was pretty high on the Cubs to actually do work. And they ended up finishing, I think, in second place in the NL Central. But, you know, ultimately, it just wasn't their year. So it could be interesting to see. It could be just interesting to see, like, what happens with that team moving forward.
Well, it seems like they're trying to piece it together without making big splashes. And that's a division you can kind of get away with that. I mean, the Brewers seem to keep coming away with it, but you don't really have any juggernauts there. So
pretty much, yeah.
Perhaps that's their mindset. But Epstein was in charge for a while. Now Jed Hoyer has it, who was an Epstein lieutenant. Also was in Boston all that time, but I think they need to get younger in that front office and a little more up with the times. But we'll wrap on that, and again, probably be back maybe one more time before the week is out. Things are going to get pretty intense, and we'll probably be banging out shows here for the next at least two weeks or so, and see how it goes. Everyone, have a good middle part of your week. Take care.